This is the Equine Forum, presented by Lane's End on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
16th to go, an American Pharoah and firing line, and it's American Pharoah pulling away late. American Pharoah rules the Derby!
Run Happy just keeps coming at him past the 16th pole. Run Happy, and boy, does this horse love to run. The aptly named Run Happy for Edgar Prado to take it.
Also sponsored by Abracadabra Farm, Adena Springs, Airdrie Stud, BetAmerica.com, Brisnet.com, Cal Density, Castleton Lions, Claiborne Farm, Coolmore, Daily Racing Form, Darley, DerbyBox.com, FarmPaint.com, Flair Equine Nasal Strips, Gainsway, Jimmy John's, Kentucky Bank, Kentucky Downs, the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission, the Lexus Store of Lexington, Maryland Thoroughbred, Mill Ridge, Nicholson Insurance, Owner View, Pin Oak Stud, Ramsey Farm, Santa Anita, Spendthrift Farm, Washington Hay, and Woodbine Entertainment.
But there's no catching Wedding Toast. Wedding Toast, much the best here, all the way in the Beldame.
There will be a fourth jewel in the crown. He's an everlasting credit to the sport. American Pharoah has belted a grand slam in the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Good morning once again, everyone, and welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Lane's End on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, Pontiff of the Pick Four, Pope Jude, Jude Feld, with me in our Lexington studios, wishing everybody across HRRN Nation a very Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and we welcome you once again on this Saturday morning, the final Saturday here in the month of December, which means our final Saturday program in 2015. And JT, what a year it has been.
It really has. It's been a very exciting year. A lot of fun. The Triple Crown, of course, everybody's eyes and thoughts, and just an amazing experience, those three races. And of course, the Breeders' Cup was awesome too. So it's just been a fantastic year for our sport, and looking forward to another big year in 2016.
Yeah, who says racing's dead when you look back on 2015?
I don't know. I mean, there's so many people that that love thoroughbred racing, and there's a lot of involvement. If you're on social media, you can see it. And American Pharoah's picked up a lot of people's heads around the country and around the world. So it's a good time to be a racing fan.
You know, voting is now open for the NTRA Moment of the Year. There are 10 choices.
Really?
I believe it's 10. Do you really have to vote? Right? Well, do you know what the moment of the year is going to be?
Well, I would think. But, you know, I'm not going to share that with anybody.
Captain Obvious, I think it's American Pharoah.
I mean, you know, no disrespect whatsoever to the chief, but somebody posted the moment of the year, the chief passing away. What the heck is that? Alan Jerkins. I mean, really?
Yeah, it's certainly one of the signature occurrences of 2015. I wouldn't look at it as the moment of the year. I mean, the moment of the year is going to be the first Triple Crown in 37 years. I mean, the racing world waited four decades for that moment.
Well, I don't, you know, pretend to know the chief as well as Sean Clancy, but I did, you know, I was stabled in his barn once and had some conversations with him. You know, he would have been appalled to even think that was one of the moments of the year. I don't know.
That's yeah.
Enough of that.
Yeah. Well, we are going to look back on 2015 on this program over the course of the next 2 hours, but we're going to do it in a little bit of a different fashion. We're going to do it through the eyes of the Horse Racing Radio Network and some of the key interviews that we had the opportunity to do throughout the year. You're going to hear from Bob Baffert, the Hall of Fame trainer who was in the spotlight for much of the year with American Pharoah, an interview that Jude and I did at the Fasig Tipton Saratoga sale this year. That comes up in the second half of the program. You're going to hear from B. Wayne Hughes of Spendthrift Farm and Hall of Fame trainer Richard Mandela. Jude and I had the opportunity before Breeders' Cup to sit down with both of those individuals together in the conference room at Spendthrift And we talked about Beholder, who ultimately got scratched from the Breeders' Cup distaff, but we talked about so many other things in that interview. We didn't get a chance to play the entire thing because she did scratch. So we're going to bring it to you this morning, right around 9 o'clock Eastern time. And then we're going to hear from Tom Hammond. Again, during Breeders' Cup week, Jude, we had the opportunity to sit down and visit with NBC's legendary broadcaster, and it was one of the highlights of our year.
Yeah, I think all three of those interviews were exceptional in different ways, not because we did them, but because the guests were so engaging and forthcoming, and you're going to hear some thoughts and things about the guests that you didn't know, that nobody has ever heard of before or since.
Yeah.
So, which is really cool. And for me, those were the three signature interviews that we did. And like I say, it wasn't because we did them. It was because the guests were so outstanding and had such great insights to offer that I really think everybody's going
to
enjoy that.
And it was not easy to narrow it down to just those three, because you can only fit so much in a two-hour program. It wasn't easy to do. We had our trainer talk show with Gay Waterhouse that we did in Saratoga, and we had a chance to meet her. Of course, if you don't know Gay Waterhouse, the legendary Australian trainer, the leading lady of Australia, so to speak, in horse racing, and that was one of the highlights of our year as well.
Yeah, that was an awesome couple of hours we spent with Gay. We had her on at the sale and for trainer talk, and it was just fantastic to meet her and now to know her and to be able to tweet with her and stuff. Really cool.
Our poll question this morning is, well, what is your moment of the year in 2015? I know American Pharoah is going to get a lot of votes, certainly the majority of them, I would think. But what is your moment of the year? We want to hear from you. You can do it at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Another way to post your moment of 2015, your personal moment. It could be very personal, and that's something that we want to hear as well. So at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. We're going to get to a break. Before we do start to look back on the year that was in 2015, we're going to be joined by Mike Willman from Santa Anita as he looks at today's opening day program at the Great Race Place in Arcadia, California. It is one of the best opening days in all of sports, and we're going to talk with Mike about it next, right here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Lane's End.
Adina Springs added Macho Uno's best son, Mucho Macho Man, to their stallion roster for the 2015 breeding season.
Are you a believer?
And with 95% of his mares getting in foal, he certainly took to his new job well. Mucho Macho Man earned $5.6 million on the track, culminating in his thrilling victory in the 2013 Breeders' Cup Classic over Will Take Charge and Declaration of War.
On the outside, Declaration of War, Will Take Charge. Mucho Macho Man just keeps on finding on the lead. Will Take Charge, a late drop. Oh, that's close. Mucho Macho Man, the more they asked, the more he gave.
Few horses can be multiple graded placed at two, run in all three legs of the Triple Crown, and then go on to become a Breeders' Cup Classic winner as an older horse. And all this from a foal born June 15th. Visit AdinaStallions.com to learn more about Mucho Macho Man and all the Adina Stallions.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Murfreesboro, Tennessee, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Saturday afternoon, Gulfstream Park's championship meet rolls on with a trio of Grade 3 stakes, the Sugar Swirl, W.L. McKnight Handicap, and La Prévoyante Handicap. Come out and enjoy breakfast at Gulfstream every Saturday morning, then take your shot at a life-changing score by playing the popular Rainbow Six wager in the afternoon. Post time during the championship meet is 12:05 on Saturdays and 12:35 all other live racing days. Visit GulfstreamPark.com.
Ramsey Farms, Kitten's Joy.
Stephanie's Kitten and Erod Ortiz Jr.
for America in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Turf.
A champion sire and producer of three Grade 1 winners in 2015.
Chiropractor March Om. Chiropractor in a driving finish here over March.
With more than $11 million in progeny earnings this year.
Big Blue Kitten won the Joe Hirsch Turf Classic.
Kitten's Joy, standing at Ramsey Farm. Visit RamseyFarm.com.
It's opening day at Santa Anita, so be sure to come early and get your 2016 wall calendar free with paid admission. Admission gates open at 10 a.m. First post time is early at 12 noon. We'll have four graded stakes highlighted by a pair of grade ones, the Malibu and the La Brea, along with the grade two Mathis Brothers Mile and the grade three Daytona. We offer free infield admission and parking each weekend. Santa Anita, great racing and great value in a world-class setting.
Are you a believer?
But it will be Justin Philip to win the Vanderbilt by two.
Justin Philip retired sound following 32 lifetime starts, 23 of those coming in graded stakes, with nine buyer speed figures of 100 or better by the exciting young sire First Samurai and a half-brother to three other graded stakes winners, including Algorithms, Seeing is Believing, with Justin Philip at Castleton Lions. Are you a believer? Hashtag Justin's Believers. Start now with your Kale Density Mare and Foal Feeding Program. Sales results were obvious at this year's Keeneland September Yearling Sale. Yearlings produced from mares fed Kale Density through their formative year were impressive, as well as horses trained and raced in 2014 and so far in 2015. Clean radiographs, conformity, strong bones, and overall health was the big winner at auction and on the track. Order your plan today at KaleDensity.com or call 877-744-9006 for more information.
Hi, I'm Richard Migliori, and I love listening to Horse Racing Radio Network. Good night, Barbados.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Lane's End on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And they're coming to the top of the stretch. Take Charge Brandy turns for home and now has lost the lead. The new leader is Bar of Gold. Cat Ballou is on the inside. And then it's By the Moon. On the far outside, Cavorting is coming with a run. And it's a strong run indeed. Here comes Cavorting on the outside of Bar of Gold. Cavorting and Herat Ortiz Jr. have taken the lead. Cavorting wins the test. Bar of Gold was second, then By the Moon and Irish Jasper.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Lane's End. Here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, Mike Penna, Jude Feld in our Lexington studios. Larry Colmus with the call of the test stakes this past summer at Saratoga. Cavorting getting the victory that afternoon. She has been so consistent throughout much of her campaign here in 2015, and she is the morning line favorite on opening day at Santa Anita in the Grade 1 La Brea Stakes. She is 5-2 on the morning line in a 10-horse field, and she is one of three entrants in the Grade 1 competition out there by trainer Kieran McLaughlin. So a very busy day for him and a busy day for racing fans, Jude, as they prep for that traditional post-Christmas opening day at the Great Race Place.
Well, there's nothing like opening day at Santa Anita. And when I was a kid, they used to have this commercial, and I've never forgotten it my whole life. What do you open the day after Christmas? Santa Anita.
Clever.
Yeah, it was one of the best ads ever. And opening day at Santa Anita is like nowhere else. Opening day at Santa Anita is very, very special. It's still people are on a high from Christmas morning, and you're at the most beautiful racetrack in the United States, and you've got all these great horses and such anticipation of the meet and what it's going to bring. And of course, horse players are like at a fever pitch. We used to get the form on Christmas Eve and lay down on the floor in the living room and start handicapping. My mom would get so upset with us, but that was a family tradition.
You know, it seems like we tell that story every year on this program when we get ready for opening day after Christmas. And Mike Willman, the director of publicity at Santa Anita, is a California guy. He grew up with very much that same tradition, and he joins us now from the Great Race Place. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, guys. Great to be with you, and we're really, really excited about opening up on Saturday, and we really we expect a crowd well north of 40,000 on track. Should be a tremendous day, and Cavorting, certainly one of the marquee names on the card.
Yeah, how about Kieran? He's going to be busy out there on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, he sure is. And I want to give a tip of the cap to Mike Lakow and Rick Amerley in the racing office. They've been very, very aggressive and trying to recruit guys from out of state, Midwest, back east to coming out. And it just seems like it's harder than ever to get stables to come. But in this case, Kieran's, you know, his barn hasn't come, but he's come with some pretty big weapons here for opening weekend. We're looking forward to it.
Mike, what makes opening day at Santa Anita so special?
Well, I think Jude just mentioned it, the old commercial. It's it's the adult sandbox thing. I mean, the pressure's off. The kids have been taken care of. It's the day after Christmas. Now let's get down to business. And, you know, there's a lot of pent-up anticipation for the opener. Let's face it, we've been idling now since the Crosby meet at Del Mar through Los Alamitos. 3 weeks down there, just a different kind of racing. Now we get back to the big leagues here, and I think people are they're on the muscle. They're ready for some great racing, and we hope to be able to provide that.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, in the old days, we had kind of a month hiatus from racing, so that got everybody hepped up, and I think everybody from a racing family or you know, racing fans in general couldn't wait for opening day then, and it's just carried over through the years. I mean, opening day at Santa Anita is a big deal in the Pasadena, L.A., Arcadia area, and everybody would go out for opening day. It was such a big deal.
No question, Jude. And, you know, the wall calendar, the traditional wall calendar, is still immensely popular. Got a great photo on the cover this year of Martin Garcia on American Pharoah in the morning. And let's face it, I mean, he was the biggest story in 37 years last year. This year, I should say, earlier. And, you know, so a lot of people come out for that. It's free with paid admission. We've also got a great partnership going with Mathis Brothers Furniture. The first 20,000 through the gates on Saturday, they get a $100 gift certificate with no strings attached to Mathis Brothers. They're one of the largest retail furniture purveyors in the country. And, I mean, you can go out there and get sheets, whatever you want. You don't have to get a bedroom set. It's $100 good on anything they have with no minimum purchase, anything like that. So it's a great enticement. And, you know, we got $1 million guaranteed late pick four. So really, really excited about it. And we've got Run Happy. You know, he's quite a story, as you guys know. He's going, I believe, for his sixth win in a row. Comes off that win in the Breeders' Cup Sprint, and the trainer was fired the next morning there at Keeneland. He's been vanning up to Bradbury just about every day to get some sun on his back and kind of roll around in a paddock up there. And then they bring him back down to the track. Hey, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. They got a unique way of doing things, and it's working with this horse. There's no doubt about that.
Santa Anita Director of Publicity Mike Willman joining us on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike, so often the emphasis during a meet like this upcoming Santa Anita meet is placed on the three-year-olds because everything is pointed toward the road to the Kentucky Derby and, of course, culminating with the Santa Anita Derby on April 9th. But you mentioned Run Happy. We're going to see some of the top older horses moving forward into next year as well, and get a chance to look at horses pointing for the big cap and those types of races that you have on the program too.
That's true. It's my understanding, though, Run Happy is due to fly out on Monday, win, lose, or draw. So I don't know what is on his dance card. Gary Stevens will be riding him for the first time in the Malibu, and I'm sure he'd like to stay with him. You know, Edgar Prado, who had ridden him in his last three races, is injured right now. But in answer to him specifically, I don't know what's on tap for him. You know, as far as older horses, the first big story is going to be January 9th with the San Pasqual. California Chrome is due to run in there. Really, really looking forward to that. And he might be on a collision course with Dortmund there. Now, you know, Dortmund's obviously got recency in his corner, but California Chrome, I don't think that's too tall of an assignment off the bench for him, a mile and a 16th. The ultimate objective, apparently, once again, going to be the Dubai World Cup, where he ran second earlier this year. But that's a race that I think people are going to be circling on that calendar. That's Saturday, January 9th, the San Pasqual.
There's always been a plethora of talented horses on display during the Santa Anita meet, but it seems to me like this year, you may have more champions on the grounds than any other year. Horses that have already been crowned champion and horses that will be crowned champion. Pretty impressive lineup as you go through the barn area.
Well, one of them's got to be in the Hollendorfer barn. You know, her name is Songbird, undefeated filly. She comes off the win in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies, and Hollendorfer's already announced that they're not going to entertain the idea of running against the Colts. They're going to point for the Kentucky Oaks and, you know, run at Santa Anita into the spring. So she's really one to watch. And, of course, a lot of people kind of looked askance at Nyquist, even though he came into the Breeders' Cup with a brilliant form. They were kind of the wise guys were saying that he hadn't been that impressive in his last two starts. Well, he lost a ton of ground, and he still won the juvenile. He's due to run in the San Vicente early in January, going 7/8 for Doug O'Neill. Unfortunately, it looks like he won't be running in the Santa Anita Derby. He was sold at auction there in Florida, so there's a $1 million bonus waiting for him if he wins the Florida Derby. So that's pretty exciting. But looking forward to seeing Nyquist going 7/8 and starting down that road to the first Saturday in May.
Yeah, he's a very exciting horse. You got Beholder on the grounds. I would imagine she's going to be pointing for some big races at Santa Anita.
Yeah, Mandela has hasn't penciled out anything for her. Definitely. It's really unfortunate. She spiked that fever there in Kentucky, as we know, leading into the Classic. What a showdown that was going to be against the boys. But now they'll just kind of try and regroup. Hats off to Wayne Hughes. You know, he said, hey, I'm having more fun than I could ever have. Why would I want to stop the party now? So she's going to run as a six-year-old. I don't know what's in her immediate future, but I think she's – I'm not sure. Is she back with Richard Jude? She had been on a farm nearby. Is she back in? I'm not aware of that.
I thought she was, but I couldn't swear to it. We'll have to check with Richard and find out.
Well, anyway, that said, she's a ways away, you know. And getting greedy, I'd love to see her run in the Santa Margarita. But even that might be a little bit too quick. I just don't know.
Mike, in terms of what we're going to see on Saturday's opening day program, we're going to see the four graded stakes with the Grade 3 Daytona, the Grade 2 Mathis Brothers Mile, the Grade 1 La Brea, and the Grade 1 Malibu. Walk us through some of the prime contenders in each of those races.
Well, in the Mathis Brothers Mile, I thought this was just an absolutely wide-open type, looking race. Anytime you see Mike Smith on a horse that was ninth last time out, that has to get your attention, and that's the case with Mr. Brightside. Now, Mr. Jeremy Noceda was very, very critical via social media of one Kent DeSormo the night after that Grade 1 Hollywood Derby at Del Mar. And, you know, the horse, he got shuffled back. If you look at the race, I don't think it was Kent's fault in any way. He got shuffled way, way back. And then finally kind of found room at 16th out. And, Kent, he chose not to get after him. He got beat less than five lengths. He can win. There's no question about that. Smith takes over for the first time. He's a very, very talented colt, an Irish bred. And this will be his third start in this country. He ran a good second here in the Twilight Derby, in behind Danny Hendricks' Ohm in his U.S. debut on October 24th at Santa Anita. So he's got a big shot. And again, Ohm is a horse that he's got a tremendous chance. He's got the kind of tactical speed that keeps him out of trouble. He was third, beating a half length at 4-5 in the Hollywood Derby. But in looking at him and Mr. Brightside, I think I'm going to lean to Mr. Brightside. I just think maybe there's more upside in this particular race for him. Smith, interestingly enough, takes off Ocho 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 for Jim Cassidy. Ocho 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 was a supplemental entry. And so Santiago Gonzalez, who's been winning a lot of races for Jim Cassidy all year long, takes over. But if I had to narrow it down to one, I think it's going to be Mr. Brightside trying to mind his manners at the gate and getting a good trip. As for the La Brea guys, you mentioned Cavorting. Her credentials speak for herself. A disappointment, obviously, that she couldn't close enough ground to make her presence felt there in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare sprint at Keeneland where she was fourth. I'm going to take the local horse who comes in fresh and really at the peak of her game, and that's Ben's Duchess. I think she's the second choice. I don't have the morning line in front of me, but I think she's 3-1, and Cavorting, as you noted, Mike, was 5-2. So I'll take Ben's Duchess in that heat with Talamo sticking with her.
Yeah, that's a very competitive race. Hot City Girl might have a look in there too. She's got a ton of speed. The two grade ones are just outstanding races, and you know, Run Happy's going to be the favorite, obviously, but the two that Kieran brought are no slouches. Watershed ran that big race at Saratoga, coming off a maiden, going from a maiden victory to the grade one King's Bishop, and was flying at the end. So that was against Run Happy. And Marking is undefeated. He's been very impressive in two starts. And then you throw in El Kabir. That's one of the best Malibus I think we've had in a while.
Oh, it's a good one. Run Happy alone kind of makes the race. And let's face it, the fact that the trainer was fired the day after, I'm the director of publicity. These are the kind of things that are gin up the conversation and everything else, dude. On the face of it, you say, how in the world could they do that? I don't know how they could do it, but they did it, and it gets people talking, and that's what I want.
You know, played right into your hands.
Exactly, dude. You know that.
Yeah.
So, and then, you know, you mentioned the Daytona coming down the hill. And by the way, the rain, we're looking good. It's overcast today, but there's no more rain forecast. Looks like a 0% chance Christmas and through the weekend. So I got my fingers crossed, and I'll knock wood here on air that the Daytona stays on the hillside. I'm really partial to a California bred in there. He's cutting back in distance. His name is Alert Bay, and he's trained by a guy that just does a tremendous job up north, Blaine Wright. This horse shortens up from a mile to 16th out of the Seabiscuit at Del Mar. You know, he's 4-for-5 over the course at Santa Anita. He's never been down the hillside. But I've seen enough of him to really form the opinion that he can do just about anything. And I think he's going to be very, very tough at a little bit of a price with Mario Gutierrez, who, aside from the I'll Have Another Derby year, is having the best year of his career. He has improved immeasurably. A year ago at this time, there was a lot of talk to the effect that maybe he's going to be getting back up to Canada come springtime. But, you know, he got married earlier this year. His wife has kind of got him in some motivational-type programs and everything else. Jude, this kid is just – he's come a million miles. He really has. And not only as a person handling the media and everything, but I think as a race rider day in, day out, he's a better rider. And anyway, all that said, I'm going to give Alert Bay some pretty strong consideration in the Daytona.
Yeah, he's a very talented horse. Won almost half his starts, I think, or maybe more than half his starts. Really cool horse.
Yeah, I think he's 11-for-21 lifetime. So it's a wide open kind of race. I just feel like he's got a great shot.
Well, Mike, it promises to be an unbelievable opening day, and no doubt an unbelievable meet there at the Great Race Place. And certainly appreciate all your time this morning, and look forward to seeing you when we get out there later on in the season.
Okay, Mike, Jude, I just want to let everybody know we will run this Wednesday. We got a 5-day week coming up. A lot of people off work, so. We're dark Monday, Tuesday, but we're up and running first post time, 12:30 Pacific on Wednesday.
There he is. Mike Willman does a great job. Keep it rolling, Mike. Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
All right, Mike, like all of our guests who appear on the program, receives a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. Exciting times, JT.
Yeah, no, it's great. Sanita opening. Can't wait. Very excited to watch the races today. Great races all over the place, and I'm looking forward to playing in that Boxing Day betting challenge that Stuart Slagle's got going on. That's going to be fun.
All right, Mike, always so generous with his time, and we wanted to keep him on the line a little bit longer because of his analysis of those races for you. So because of that, we're going to bypass our Lexus Legends of the Turf story this morning. We will bring you a commercial from the Lexus store of Lexington right there on the corner of New Circle and Liberty. Then we'll take a short commercial break, and we will be back to hear from Tom Hammond, the legendary NBC broadcaster, as we begin our look back on the year that was here in 2015 through the eyes of the Horse Racing Radio Network. We're back right after this word from Lexus.
Lexus, once driven,
there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Pena here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the Godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
First Samurai is America's best sire son of champion Giants Causeway. Already the sire of a champion, First Samurai has Grade 1 winners on both coasts.
But it will be Justin Phillip to win the Vanderbilt by two.
As well as graded stakes horses around the country.
And Lee has won the Don under Joel Rosario.
Get happy, mister, in front. Get happy, mister, has won it.
First Samurai, a proven sire of quality at Claiborne Farm.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Power.
Caracondi, the favorite in front. The Spaniard, News of Canarias, is fighting back. Caracondi has won.
Passion.
Prestige Vendome is making him fight all the way towards the line. It's Caracondi winning by about a neck or so.
Performance.
Caracondi with a rush on the outside goes Bantam. Lead run from Adam Dahl. Caracondi and O'Dahl. Caracondi.
Gainesway is home to North America's leading sire, Tappet, and is proud to announce the addition of multiple group and grade one winner, Caracondi. One of the leading juveniles in Europe, Caracondi won the Group 1 Grand Criterium with a time form rating of 115, and at 3, he scored impressively in the Group 1 French 2000 Guineas and stormed home to win the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Mile at Santa Anita. Caracondi, standing at Gainesway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainesway Farm.
It's opening day at Santa Anita, so be sure to come early and get your 2016 wall calendar free with paid admission. Admission gates open at 10 a.m. First post time is early at 12 noon. We'll have four graded stakes highlighted by a pair of grade ones, the Malibu and the La Brea, along with the grade two Mathis Brothers Mile and the grade three Daytona. We offer free infield admission and parking each weekend. Santa Anita, great racing and great value in a world-class setting.
Airdrie Stud is proud to introduce Summer Front for the 2016 breeding season.
Summer Front and Joe Bravo have won.
A multiple graded stakes winning millionaire by the Great War Front, Summer Front began his career as an undefeated multiple stakes winner at 2 before going on to win graded stakes at 3, 4, and 5. Boasting a top-class pedigree and the jaw-dropping looks that made him a $475,000 sales horse. The explosiveness, the looks, and the pedigree to be a truly important sire. Airdrie Stud's Summer Front. Think about it.
Hi, this is Doug O'Neill. My favorite radio show is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Well, 2015 certainly was a magical year with Thoroughbred Racing, the first Triple Crown winner in more than, well, in 37 years, in nearly four decades. And it was a race you heard right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. We're going to look back over the remainder of the program on some of the moments that we felt were kind of the highlights for us here on the network. Jude and I had a chance to sit down and interview so many of the biggest names in racing throughout the year. It was not easy to narrow this down, but JT, we did our best, and we're going to have interviews coming up with NBC broadcaster Tom Hammond that we did right before Breeders' Cup, B. Wayne Hughes and Richard Mandela from before the Breeders' Cup as well, where we sat down with them at Spendthrift Farm, and then, of course, Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert, and a man who needs absolutely no introduction.
And he actually sat down with us.
He did. That was cool.
Yeah, we'll get to that before that episode. But the interview with Tom Hammond took place at the National Turf Writers and Broadcasters Association Awards and dinner, a yearly event that's a lot of fun, and they did a great job, and it was great to have that few moments with Tom.
And we'll have that interview for you momentarily, but before we do, we want to remind you that Tonalist, Mr. Speaker, Honor Code, and Liam's Map reinforce the power of Lane's End Stallions. The 2016 roster builds on Lane's End's legacies, AP Indy, King Mambo, and Smart Strike, as the new crop joins the ranks of current leading stallions Candy Ride, Lemon Drop Kid, Mineshaft, The Factor, Union Rags, Noble Mission, and City Zip. The successful tradition of the 13-time leading stud farm continues. Lane's End. You can visit lanesend.com to learn more. One quick side note on Mike Willman in the interview you just heard a moment ago from Santa Anita. We, in the interest of full disclosure, we are recording that interview on Wednesday morning because of Christmas. And Mike mentioned a couple of times that the weather was going to be good over the next couple of days, meaning Thursday and Friday, but supposed to be beautiful on Saturday afternoon for opening day at Santa Anita. Just wanted to clean that up for you so you would understand. Tom Hammond, the legendary NBC broadcaster, he did take the time to visit with us this past October, and here's what he had to say. And now get to visit with one of the greatest broadcasters who has ever lived, and that is Tom Hammond of NBC. And maybe I'm pouring it on a little bit thick, but I'll tell you, we just did a little sound check here with the microphones, and I said, this is cool. I never get to do a sound check with Tom Hammond.
I sort of winced when you said the greatest broadcaster. I don't know about that. But I'm happy to be here and happy to be honored to get the Jim McKay Award, which, as you know, Jim McKay, arguably the greatest sports broadcaster of all time, so anytime your name is linked with his, it's an honor.
And being a native of Lexington, to be here and honored in your hometown tonight has to be special.
Always special. I always say that to be honored by the home folks is the best of all, to get that respect. And one of the things that I enjoy most is I will be somewhere in the middle of the world and some stranger will come up to me and say, I am from Kentucky, and you make us proud. That's about the best it gets.
That's fantastic. Yes.
Especially awesome. For somebody from Lexington, Kentucky. Yeah, it certainly goes a long way. Tom, when you look back on your career and you think about graduating from the University of Kentucky, could you ever imagine that it would take you to the heights that it has and you would end up where you are?
Not in the least, Mike, because I was pretty shy all through high school and into college. I never dreamt I would be a member of the media. I majored in animal science, and I thought I was going to the thoroughbred business. I worked at the racetrack in the summers and got my degree, and when I got my degree, I couldn't get a very good job. So out of semi-desperation, I went to graduate school. And while I was there, I got a part-time job reading race results on the radio because I couldn't find anybody else. So for $35 a week, I started reading the race results on the radio before the information age, when the breeders would have to listen to the radio to get those results or wait to the paper the next day. So I just kept volunteering for things at the radio station, moved on to local TV for 10 years, and then at the first Breeders' Cup in 1984, NBC hired me to be a member of the team. They were a little nervous. They'd never covered horse racing, and they saw all these races lasting 2 minutes, and they were on the air for 4 hours. So they assembled a large team. But at the end of that day, Michael Weissman came up to me and said, would you be interested in doing other things for NBC Sports, starting with NFL football? So I've been there ever since, 31 years.
Wow, that's a fantastic run, but it's nice that they actually picked a horse guy to cover horse racing. That's so rare.
And of course, you're going to be presented for the award tonight by your good friend and colleague Donna Barton Brothers, who is with us as well. And Donna, for you, this has to be a tremendous honor to be able to present your good friend Tom.
Yeah, he's not only a good friend and a colleague, he's been a mentor. There's been so many times, you know, my first network television show was the Breeders' Cup in 2000. So never having done any sort of network shows, I'm on for 5 hours and we cover 8 races. And so it was sort of baptism by fire at first, but Tom Hammond and Mike Battaglia were my two go-to people. And anytime I'd have a question, and Tom's been a huge help to me.
Try to teach you the good things, Mike.
You do try to teach some bad things too, Tom Hammond.
If we're being honest here.
Off-air bad things.
What would you say is probably the most significant lesson that you've learned in working with Tom Hammond?
Don't let your question be longer than the potential answer.
Great advice.
There were times I would come to him and say, I want to ask this question. And I would give him the whole question, but it told a story with it. And he would go, that question is way too long. It's going to be longer than the answer. So that would probably be the best early advice he gave me. And then I'd say from there, what I've learned from Tom is that, you know, my goal was always to have a great show. And when you try to have a great show, you're striving for perfection. And what I've learned from Tom is to try to tell great stories. And if you tell great stories and we all work together seamlessly to do that, and we listen to each other, we're going to have a great show.
Yeah, how important is listening with the broadcast?
Jude, it's amazing how many broadcasters don't listen. I think it's the most important thing. How many times do you see an interviewer ask a question and then obviously thinking of the next question they're going to ask, and ignore something really interesting that the interviewee said? It happens all the time.
Yeah.
And as sort of the traffic cop of the broadcast where I am, I try to listen to everything that happens so that I can reference it. I could pay attention and, advance the story, so to speak. So listening to me is the most important thing and often is not done.
You know, we've often said on the radio side of things that the most important aspect of doing race coverage is to make people feel as if they're sitting there next to you, because there are no graphics. They can't see it. And I'm curious, Tom, when you are on air and you're hosting a broadcast, what's the most important thing in your perspective on the television side?
Pay attention to know what's going on, to know what the stories are, and to be able to tell those stories. And if someone else tells a story, for me to compliment by adding on to it. It works in football and racing and everything you do. And, of course, comes first listening, and second of all, paying attention and managing to advance the story. So, and being conversational is the other thing. I try to be conversational as if we were all sitting around a table talking. Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that I want to say that Tom does really well, and I think a lot of broadcasters have learned from him, is that he lays out really well. Because like you said, in radio broadcasting, you're having to be the eyes and ears for your listeners. But in television, our listeners are getting to see what's happening. And so, like, after American Pharoah won the Triple Crown when he won the Belmont Stakes, Tom laid out for a good, 20 seconds, maybe 30 seconds, and then finally said he did it, and then let the crowd noise and Victor Espinoza's celebration in the aftermath tell the story instead of trying to trump that story with a story of his own.
Yeah, there's nothing I could say that could add to that moment. I could only detract from it. The pictures told, and the natural sound told the story, so I could only detract from the story. So I tried to be quiet, know when to lay out. I'm famous for doing that in a lot of sports. I'm famous for the hand to my partner that no one else can see it, but about a moment that we ought to lay out, I'm famous for doing this to them, and some of them don't quite like it. But and for the people listening on the radio, I'm holding my hand up in front of his face. So
you can only imagine. but that's a thing that I've read Vin Scully is a big fan of, and sometimes I've become a little bit of a critic of broadcasters, right, as I'm watching them, and sometimes they do have a tendency to, like, jump right in there when something great happens, and I really, having grown up in LA and
right,
having listened to Scully so long, you do realize that sometimes silence is the best thing.
Absolutely. And Jude, so many young broadcasters, there are 200 choices now on television, so I don't begrudge them trying to call attention to themselves. But they want to put their stamp on that moment, and all they're doing is detracting from that great moment by putting up some comment. So I think sometimes you're right. Silence is the best.
Tom, you've had so many memorable moments, the Olympics, the NFL, college football, whatever it might be. Where does American Pharoah's Triple Crown rank for you?
It's right up there, Mike. I haven't quantified it exactly where it stands in terms of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, but certainly it's right there. If not at the top, near the top. It was such a scene as they turned for home, and Donald on horseback on the other side couldn't really see all this happening or hear it happening, maybe. She, I don't know, she heard some of it. But as they turned for home when it became obvious that American Pharoah was going to win the Triple Crown, the people just went crazy. And there were only 90,000 there, and I've been in stadiums that have held 120,000, even more than that. But the noise was absolutely deafening. People then started standing on tables and on chairs and throwing drinks in the air, and everybody holding their cell phones up to take video of that moment. And the roar continued past the finish line all the way till the horse was pulling up. And then I thought Victor Espinosa did a brilliant thing. Instead of coming right back into the winner's circle, he took American Pharoah the length of the grandstand for everybody to have a good look at him, and then brought him back to the winner's circle. So it was certainly one of the great moments I've ever been a part of.
Don, how about for you, being on horseback when he crosses the finish line? What was that moment like?
Well, it was surreal. There was a family of five people on the outside fence there at Belmont Park where I was with my horse, and they were rooting really loudly during the race. I had two earpieces in because I knew the crowd noise would be a formidable opponent for trying to listen to Tom throw to me or to anything else. But even through my two earpieces, I could hear the lady shouting to me, "Did he win? Did he win?" And so I turned to her and said, "Yes, he won." And as soon as I said that, she and her whole family, there were like three kids, like I would say 7, 10, and 12, and her husband, break out in cheering and crying. And so for a brief second, I felt that emotion, and I was like, whoa, stop that. We can't have that emotion coming right now. So I had to kind of reel it back in again. And then the crowd noise that Tom was talking about was so loud that he threw to me twice, and I never even heard him. And I couldn't figure out why until I watched the replay of the show, and I realized that what happened was the crowd noise was coming through Tom's microphone. And so it was drowning out his voice. And so I didn't hear the throw to me until our producer piped in and said, "Donna, go." And I could hear him because he was in the truck. But it was just a surreal moment.
We talked about the race a little bit today, and Joel Rosario talking about getting past and then enjoying watching American Pharoah win the Triple Crown. And we were talking about the fact that that's got to be like one of the few times a jockey, maybe the only time a jockey would really enjoy getting beat. You know, I mean, he wanted to win the race, but once he figured out that wasn't happening, he was just enjoying
the moment.
Yeah, which was really cool.
Yeah, I think that all the jockeys wanted to win that race because they wanted to be the one to win the Triple Crown, and if they could stop Victor Espinosa from doing it, they had a shot to be the one to do it next. But at the same time, once they realized that they weren't going to beat him, I think they all took special pride in being a part of the race, a part of the moment.
And it's not just the 37-year wait that I think makes it so special. It's the charisma and the personality of the horse himself. You know, he's such a people horse, and it's just easy to fall in love with him for sure.
Tom Hammond finally had his picture taken with him at Monmouth Park when he came for the Haskell.
Yeah, I have yet to do that.
Yeah. You got to get there,
you're
Mike.
You're running out of time.
Yeah, you are running out of time.
I know. I'm going to have to wait.
Are you planning to go to the farm when he's...
I'm going to have to wait until he gets to Coolmore.
Yeah.
Tom Hammond, Donna Brothers from NBC Sports. Tom, of course, the recipient of the Jim McKay Award for Broadcasting Excellence here at the National Turf Writers Dinner this evening, and really looking forward to that one coming up later here tonight. Tom, in terms of other sports that you've been involved with, we mentioned the Olympics. We mentioned so many of the football games in the NFL. What are some of those other moments in those sports that will always be memorable for you?
Well, Chris Collinsworth and I did the Orange Bowl for the national championship with Nebraska and Miami, and that was quite a scene, and quite with Miami leading the whole way. And we said, well, you better not celebrate yet, because those big Nebraska offensive linemen pound on you for a while, and in the fourth quarter it might be a different story. And that's exactly what happened. That was a great moment. When Michael Johnson became the first man in Olympic history to win both the 400 meters and the 200 meters in the same Olympic Games, it was in Atlanta. And as he ran in the 200, he had golden shoes, if you remember that moment, flashing, and the flash bulbs of the cameras following him around the stadium. And it was such an exciting moment. Not only did he win, of course, but he set the world record in the process. And I began calling the race sitting down in my spot. And at the end of the race, without even realizing it, I had stood to my feet and, you know, was enjoying that moment as well. One that Donna knows well was Kathy Freeman, the Aboriginal Australian, winning before 120,000 at Sydney Olympic Stadium after being chosen to light the Olympic flame in the opening ceremonies. And the pressure on her was so immense, and yet she came through with it and then collapsed after the race with the weight of the world taken off her shoulders. in the NBA playoffs when Reggie Miller scored, what, 6 points in just a few seconds? You remember that when he hit a three,
sure.
Stole the inbounds pass, took one dribble back behind the line and hit another three? That was a great moment at Madison Square Garden. You know, I can just go on and on. I'm sure I'm forgetting
Usain
some moments.
Bolt.
Usain Bolt, of course.
Yeah.
Thank
yeah,
you
him.
Very much. See, this is what Donna does. She keeps me on. Usain Bolt, when he first jumped into the world's consciousness in Beijing in 2008, and when he won the 100 there, he did it in such commanding fashion. He was just clowning around at the end, and he smashed the world record. Didn't set a new world record. He just smashed it to pieces. And we went back and looked at the tape, and his right shoelace was untied, and it was flopping around as he was doing this amazing run. And he is just an amazing athlete. 6'5". You've never been seen a 6'5" man able to start that quickly. Usually they're just getting started by the time the 100 meters is over. And he's become such a joy to watch. He's an athlete, I think, that's probably, Americans wouldn't realize this, but probably the most popular athlete in the world. Mobbed wherever he goes, but he's a genuine man. I'll give you an example. At the World Championships in Beijing this summer, he had won the 200 meters, which was his second gold medal. And as he was taking his victory lap, a Chinese cameraman riding a Segway accidentally hit the inner rail and bounced into Usain Bolt, knocked him over backwards. He turned a backward somersault, scraped his leg, and everything else. When Bolt got up, the first thing he did was go over to the Chinese cameraman to make sure he was okay. And then the next day, before he ran in the relays, he stopped and the Chinese man came over to him and gave him something to put on his wrist as a Chinese token of apology. And Usain went ahead and wore that when he won, anchoring the winning relay for the Jamaican team. So when they're getting ready to run a race and there's a medal ceremony going on, most of the other guys that are getting ready to run are taking care of business, doing things, not paying any attention. Usain Bolt always stops, stands, not at attention, but at least upright and paying attention to the medal ceremony out of respect. So he's a good guy.
Wow. Wow. We heard Donna mention earlier the emotions that started to creep in after American Pharoah won the Triple Crown. Have there been moments throughout your career where you've had to corral those emotions and kind of suppress them because you knew you were coming right back?
Yeah, there have been a few. At the Vancouver Olympic Games, Joanne Rochette, the French-Canadian Olympic skater, took the ice 2 days after her mother had unexpectedly passed away. She couldn't decide whether to skate or not, finally decided to skate. And as she skated, the tears were just cascading down her face. And it was just such an emotional moment. As Scott Hamilton said at the time, it makes each person think of loved ones they've lost. And Chris Collinsworth and Al Michaels came over just to be spectators in our booth that night, and I looked over at them and they were bawling like babies.
Well, I might be easy, but I'm wanting to cry from you just telling the story.
You know, I could spend all night talking with Tom and hearing these stories, but Tom, I know that you have other things to do this evening. We're going to let you and Donna go enjoy it, and again, congratulations on the Jim McKay Award tonight. Very special.
Thanks, Mike.
And congratulations on an outstanding career.
Thank you very much.
Well, forget about a look back on racing in 2015. That was a journey through history with someone who has been the voice of that history for so many. Wow.
Yeah, I don't even want to talk. I just want to stay silent. I mean, it blew me away when we did that interview. It was so awesome, and it was great to have Donna there. We didn't give her much of an intro, but it was great because they're very close friends, and that was just a really special moment for you and I. And hope everybody enjoyed that.
Yeah, and of course, Tom and Donna, part of that NBC television broadcast team, and they'll be part of it again in 2016, and can't wait to see them doing their thing on television together. They make up just an amazing team, and of course, our good friend Larry Colmus with the call of all those races certainly fits right in with everybody, too. So we're going to get to a break. When we come back, we'll get you set for the second half of the program, our interview with Wayne Hughes and Richard Mandela, still yet to come. And then that sit-down interview with Bob Baffert at the Fasic Tipton Sale. You will not want to miss that. He says some things that I'm sure you haven't heard anywhere else. You'll hear him coming up in the second half of the show. Right here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
I'm back with Dr. Jim Chiappetta from Flair Equine Nasal Strips. Jim, why are we seeing more horsemen around the world using Flair strips?
Mike, I think more horsemen are realizing the simple fact that breathing easier is critical for horses' health and performance. When running, horses are bringing in about 10 bathtubs of air every minute through the narrowest part of the airway that collapses at speed. What the strips do is support the tissue in that region so it collapses less, so horses bring the air in more efficiently.
Breathe easy with Flair Strips. FlairStrips.com.
Introducing the Spendthrift for 2016 Palace, the multiple Grade 1 winning millionaire and fastest son of leading sire City Zip. Palace proved to be a leading sprinter in North America in 2014 and 2015, winning such New York staples as the Grade 1 Forgo Stakes, Grade 1 Vanderbilt Stakes, and Grade 2 True North Stakes. Palace is set to retire at season's end to Spendthrift. For more information on Palace, call us toll-free at 888-816-8787. That's 888-816-8787.
Have you been looking for high quality, consistent, and palatable hay, along with a company that offers personal service and attention? Well, your search is over. Washington Hay Company has been feeding your dream for more than 25 years with only the highest quality hay. Their three-tie red, white, and blue string certifies their hay is the finest premium Western Timothy and alfalfa, direct from Washington State. And with delivery to Keeneland, Churchill Downs, and farms in Central Kentucky, Washington Hay Company is feeding your dream. Learn more by following Washington Hay Company on Facebook today.
Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Penna, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word jockey to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Exacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word jockey to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms mgive.org/chi.
Love horse racing? Climb aboard the A-Train every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday from 3 to 6 Eastern with Express Bet Radio on HRRN. The Big A, Anthony Stabile, and the Little A, Acacia Courtney, team up to bring you live race coverage from tracks across the country and interviews with the biggest names in racing. It's all aboard the A-Train. Wednesdays through Fridays on Express Bet Radio on HRRN. Tune in 3 to 6 Eastern on Sirius 220 XM 206 and streaming live at horseracingradio.net.
This is the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Just joining us here on the Equine Forum, presented by Lane's End. Merry Christmas, happy holidays. Mike Penna, Jude Feld in our Lexington studios, looking back on moments that were in 2015, some of the signature moments, at least in our opinion, through the eyes of the Horse Racing Radio Network with interviews of, well, with some of the top people in the game, including Tom Hammond. You just heard that interview with NBC's broadcaster a short time ago. Mike Willman joined us in the first half of the program as well. We got a chance to talk some Santa Anita with him. And in the second half of the show, Wayne Hughes and Richard Mandela. That interview is one you won't want to miss, and it comes up in just about 4 or 5 minutes from right now. Bob Baffert, the interview we did with him at the Fasig Tipton Saratoga sale, is going to come your way right around 9:30 Eastern. And then we'll wrap up this edition of the Equine Forum for you here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. You know what's so great about Verizon? Well, they're always coming up with new ways to make it easier to use our phones. Everywhere you go now, we are connected. And that's why Verizon customers can now get 2 free gigs of data for life. New and existing Verizon wireless customers will receive 2 gigabytes of bonus data every month for every new phone they add or upgrade on XL or XXL Verizon plans. This holiday season, you can visit your local Verizon Wireless location to upgrade your current plan or add a line to receive your free 2 gigabytes of data for life. Can't wait to get to the second half of the show, JT.
Yeah, no, it's great. So far, so good. Loving it.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Again, Wayne Hughes, Richard Mandela, that interview coming up in a few moments. Bob Baffert, also part of that second half of a very busy Equine Forum looking back on 2015. We'll do all that next, right after we pause 10 seconds for station identification, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
This is the Equine Forum, presented by Lane's End.
The 37-year wait is over. American Pharoah is finally the one. American Pharoah has won the Triple Crown.
Songbird is just rolling past the eighth pole, has the lead by six. Rachel Valentina is in second, but there is absolutely no stopping Songbird.
Beholder, once again, is just making this look so easy. It is Beholder in an absolute canter, being geared down late by Gary Stevens. Beholder in a formality.
Stop Charging Maria, short lead. Stellar Wind is fighting on. Stop Charging Maria just keeps battling back. Stop Charging Maria wins the Longines Breeders' Cup Distaff.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum, presented by Lane's End on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, Jude Feld, the Pontiff of the Pick Four, Pope Jude. You can check out his selections at popejude.com. And we are with you here in studio in Lexington this morning, a post-Christmas edition of the Equine Forum.
Yeah, it's going to be a great day of racing. Got a full Pope Jude sheet. Stakes laden cards all over the country, looking forward to today's events. But this show's all about the past and 2015, and what a 2015 it was.
If you missed any portion of the show, any of the interviews, especially with Mike Willman, who joined us in the first half of the program from Santa Anita, you can go to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast at your leisure. You can also do that, Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Our poll question today is, what is your moment of 2015? I'm sure American Pharoah winning the Triple Crown is going to be a popular one, but you may have a personal moment that stood out to you. What is it? We want to hear from you at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And Jude, before we get to our next interview with Wayne Hughes and Richard Mandela that we did prior to Beholder being scratched from the Breeders' Cup Classic this past year, I want to remind listeners that we are just 5 weeks away from the kickoff of Saturdays at Gulfstream, coming on the heels of a very popular Saturdays at Saratoga series we did this past summer. We'll be at Gulfstream beginning February 6th. All the way through the Florida Derby on April 2nd, nine consecutive weeks, you'll hear this program and every big race from Gulfstream right here exclusively on HRN.
I cannot tell you how excited I am to be doing those shows.
To be in the tropics.
You may not hear it in my voice, but believe me, I am excited.
Go to our website, horseracingradio.net, and get the complete Saturdays at Gulfstream schedule. Again, it all kicks off Saturday, February 6th, with the Grade 1 Don Handicap. Well, Wayne Hughes and Richard Mandela took the opportunity to visit with Jude and I in the conference room at Spendthrift Farm right before Breeders' Cup, and here's what they had to say about their relationship and about the Super Filly Beholder. Wayne, let's go ahead and start with you. When you look back on everything that Beholder has accomplished, and you think about winning 15 of 20 lifetime starts, you think about $4.4 million in earnings, you think about a dual Eclipse champion, and then you think about what she's trying to do on Saturday in the Breeders' Cup Classic and be the first horse in history to win three Breeders' Cup races in three different divisions. When you think back on that and this ride that you've been on, what's the journey been like?
Well, it's a journey I've never been on before. That's number one. And number two, I will never be on it again. I'm satisfied. So I'm having a good time with this. We're really proud to be associated with the horse. Richard has done an unbelievable job. And So when we're happy to just be a part of it all and all the excitement, we set our goals rather high here. You know, it's not going to be easy to accomplish for her that we are going to ask her to do, because we got some monsters in there, and of course we got American Pharoah, and it's going to be a tough thing for us.
Can you ever imagine when you first started going to the races and you were trying to scrape together the money to buy a couple of horses here and there that you'd end up with a horse like Beholder?
No, I never thought that. I mean, I was in the claimer business when Warren Studi many, many years ago, 40 or 50 years, long time, it had to be 50 years ago, it was a total different experience. I mean, it's another level of racing that the people that are doing the claimers, you know, really don't get to be a part of, which was me. And now all of a sudden, because of Beholder, I mean, I'm a part of it all. It's a good thing.
What's kept you in the business so long? I mean, I've known you for 40 years, and you know, I know all the struggles that you went through early on in this business, but you kept at it, and you just kept trying to find that right horse. What's been the driving force behind that journey that you've taken?
Yeah, probably stubbornness and determination. You know, I'm just glad to be here. I've had fun. The racing has been good for me right from the get-go. Not that I was winning, because I wasn't, but because I was having a good time. It's sort of like one time I was fishing, and we didn't catch any fish, and the guide said, "I'm sorry you didn't catch any fish." And I told him, "Well, you know, we didn't come here to catch fish. We came here to fish." And that's sort of where we were in racing. We came to racing to race. And we did that maybe at lower levels, of course. But, you know, it was exciting, and it's a great sport to be involved in.
Richard, how about for you? You've been around your fair share of top thoroughbreds and greatest stakes winners and champions. And as a trainer, what's this journey been like for you with Beholder?
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun, you know, having her as a early 2-year-old and getting to develop and bring her along and just for one to just keep getting better. It's just unbelievable.
Tell me about the first time that you laid eyes on Beholder. When did you kind of get the sense that maybe she was special?
The first time I saw her, I stopped in Ocala to Raul Reyes' training stable, and there must have been about a dozen fillies there training, and they asked me which one I liked, and I said I like this one.
So you picked her out right off the bat?
Out of 12. It's not like the September sale. Yeah. 5,000.
Yeah. Well, that's still pretty good.
Yeah. Why that one?
Well, because I owned it. It was the only one that I owned.
I owned all of it.
He was 100% to get that one. He was only 50-50 on the other 11.
How about that relationship? We're sitting here with one of the preeminent owners in the game today, in B. Wayne Hughes, and we're sitting here with one of the greatest trainers that's ever lived. Why does this relationship work?
I tolerate Richard really well. And I think that's the main part. What do you think, Richard? That's a good question.
I've tried to analyze it myself. I've not come up with the answer yet.
it's a bit of a miracle if you really want to know.
it's been an emotional thing for you too, at least recently. I mean, you really seem to have an affection for this filly, and it's easy to understand why, but why the change from the regular horse owner to like now this is like a real passion for you?
Well, I mean, I've had, three or four Breeders' Cup winners before, and, you know, I was glad to have them, and it was fun. I've never had a horse that whenever she left the paddock, the crowd cheered. I've never had a horse that did what she did, and she got me emotionally hooked. And I am hooked. We're going to keep her until the end.
Have either of you ever taken the time to sit back and reflect upon what this has been like with Beholder and how blessed you've been to have her around?
Yeah, I think about it. You know, when Jude's trained horses, you walk up and down that shed row. There's one thing about it. If you have any group of horses, when you wake up in the morning, you can bet something's wrong. So when you can go through every day like that, you can't bet something's right. You can bet there's something wrong. So you got to get to work, find out what it is and fix it, do the best you can. But to have something like this come along, it's just reward after reward, and it's hard to describe. In fact, I've often thought, how much would you have to spend to make sure you got a young one that's going to be this good? And nobody would be able to put a number on that. She's one of the best of all time. So what are you going to do? You're going to buy the whole crop? There still might not be one in that crop.
That's right. There probably won't
Think
be.
About yeah. that. There is no won't. Number you could say.
Well, it's been amazing to me over the years to watch you train. You taught me a lot of things, especially at Del Mar, you know, just watching your action. But this filly is in a different class, but how have you gotten this out of her? A filly that's really not bred to go more than 6 furlongs, maybe 7, and now she runs a mile and a quarter like breaking sticks. I mean, Laz Barrera told me one time, any horse can go a distance, you just have to train him to do it. But not many people can do that, and you've done that. What kind of trainee is she? Is she easy, hard? Have you had to coax this out of her?
Well, she's got some difficult times, but handling in her works and her racing is not one of them. She's very good there. But as with young horses, as soon as I see one's fast, the last thing I do is let them show it. And I right away try to teach them to take hold and finish. As soon as I see a spark of speed and a sprinter look, and it's allowed me to stretch horses out. And I think if you just let them rip and rip and rip, they don't learn anything but that. But you've probably seen some of the workouts we do. We'll send two off, take one back, let them finish between, and they get a confidence that they can do that. So if you can get a speed horse to relax, you've got that speed to use the last quarter mile. It's a pretty nice weapon.
Yeah. Somebody was talking to me about you the other day, and they were saying, oh, you know, Richard Mandela's not that big with first-time starters and stuff. And I said, you should have known him when he was younger and had all those Truxton Kings. They would run like trained pigs. It was like easy money when I would go to the track, just bet on one of Richard's horses that would be, you know, running first time out. You won almost every race you ran in as a first-time starter trainer. And over the years, with the better horses and the distance horses, you've kind of changed your style. Has that been easy to do? Or?
That's because when I was starting to train, nobody knew who I was. And I didn't have anybody to...
That was an advantage, Richard.
I didn't have... I didn't have anybody out there that was waiting for me to come along and give horses. So I knew that each horse I ran had better count. And when I ran a maiden, it was ready to run the race of its life. And as I grew and became more successful, I realized I was taking two races out of those horses just for that one start to show them off. And I thought better to leave a little bit in the tank and a little learning room. And if they get beat their first time out, that's fine. They learn something, they come back. It's easier on them than just drilling and just making sure that they're going to fire the first time.
Wayne, when I say the name Beholder, what's the first thing that pops into your head?
Are you kidding? A horse.
It's got to be more than that.
Well, no, she's given us really so much pleasure. It's impossible for me to actually articulate the pleasure that she's afforded us. It's been really good. She is a nice horse, and I'm not saying we can beat American Feral. I don't know if we can or not, but he better be saddled up and ready to go because we're going to give him a shot.
There have been so many great Beholder moments and Beholder memories. Is there a favorite one that stands out to you?
Yeah, I would say the mile and a quarter against the Colts. When that was like, for me, you know, I said this before. I don't know if you've ever seen the Michael Jackson when he was doing the moonwalk, and he looked like he was going forward, but he was going backwards. The horses, when the holder went by the horses in front, looked like they were doing the moonwalk. And she was, I mean, I had never seen anything quite like it. It blew my mind away. Actually, I don't know how many people have seen that, but it's actually worth the trouble to take a look at it because it was spectacular.
It was quite possibly the greatest race I ever saw a horse run. I don't think I've ever seen, and I've been going to the track now for 53 years, I don't think I've ever seen a horse run like that.
It was unbelievable.
Were you expecting? We talked that day at Del Mar, and I was kind of teasing you because you had Catch a Flight in there, and you actually told me a story about having two fillies Dead Heat in a Grade One. And you said, this was quite possible that it could happen again, because I asked you about Catch a Flight, and he was going to be the favorite if Beholder didn't run, and I knew when you were going to run Beholder against Catch a Flight, you probably had a feeling that she was going to run the race of her life or as good as she could run. But were you expecting that performance? I mean, that was like an out-of-body experience for me.
Oh, yeah, I trained her to do that.
Well, I can tell you on that point, Richard said to me, I think maybe I've been holding her back.
But, the reason I started thinking about something like that early in the year when she was beating the fillies is, I pick different horses out of the barn to use as targets. I don't want to beat the same one up too many times. And it doesn't matter who I pick. We'll take her back 5-8 lengths. And when she turns for home at the 3/16 is when I tell the boy, I want her to come out and I want her to roll by. And she goes to the 3/16 5 behind, comes out 5 in front. And it doesn't matter who you put her with. And I never had done it with Catch a Flight, but I knew if I'd have worked him the same way, she'd have done the same thing. So that's what kind of got me thinking that.
Richard, you're the only trainer that I could ask this next question of. What's a more impressive accomplishment? Training a filly to beat the boys in the Breeders' Cup Classic and win 3 separate Breeders' Cup races, or winning 4 Breeders' Cup races on one program?
I don't know.
That was a spectacular day. Talk about that day. That was awesome. That was an awesome
day. He was a part of it.
Yeah, but I was a very small part.
Action this day.
Yeah. That's what Baffert said, action one day.
When the whole world is watching.
Yeah. What, why has the Breeders' Cup been so good to Richard Mandela?
I have no idea.
I can
why
tell
has
you.
The Derby
I,
been so bad to me? That's the question I want to figure out.
Well, we had some Derby horses, and they didn't make it all the way. But I can tell you that Richard is probably if you had to have a trainer that could point for a race, he is the best at that. And a lot of trainers, in my experience, they're good trainers and everything, but the horse takes them where they're going, and Richard takes the horse where it's going. Which is a big difference.
That's a little much.
You think it was a little overdone?
You got to take the right horse.
Well, you're sitting right next to him.
But thank you.
When you do have a horse that's this good, when she's going into the gate, when you're watching her race, what's that experience like? Are there some butterflies? Are there some nervous moments? What's it like?
Well, as soon as she breaks... If you're talking about her, as soon as she gets out of the gate, I've been pretty comfortable each time that she got out okay and everything was going smooth and I don't really get nervous that much until right before the race.
Richard, how about you?
One day I was just daydreaming and I actually wrote down the fear of failing greatly outweighs the excitement of winning. And that's the way I've lived my life. So when they go to the gate, I'm asking myself, did I do this? Did I do that? I can say in the Pacific Classic, it's one of the few races, because I didn't have to win that. I mean, I thought she would and that, but the pressure was off a little bit because I was trying something new. And it was a comfortable feeling. And I'm not always that way. Sometimes when I'm in the easiest races is when I'm most worried. You remember the Hollywood Gold Cup? I had 5 out of the 6 horses in the Hollywood Gold Cup once because I'd ran 1, 2, 3 in the Santa Anita Handicap, and nobody wanted to come out from the east to run against them in the Gold Cup. I was going to run all 3 again, and Lucas entered a grass horse in there. So I've got Siphon, Sandpit, Gentleman, Region, and a grass horse of mine, Talawa, just taking a shot, because there was a bonus involved. We had to have enough horses in there to do it. Mr. Hubbard owned him and said, put Talawa in there and see what happens. Lucas put this grass horse in there. I can't remember his name. And the last 3 nights, I laid there thinking, you know, Lucas would pop up with some crazy thing, and I thought, that son of a gun's going to do something here. I mean, if you're supposed to win a race, I was supposed to win that race,
right.
Which I did. Lucas ran fourth, but I sweated for 2 days thinking, how stupid am I going to feel if I don't win this one?
Well, that's one thing that I always tell people about you, is that you're pretty much single-minded. I mean, horse racing is your life. And you are probably more contemplative about your horses than any trainer I've ever met. Do you see yourself that way?
What is contemplative?
Well, you think about them. I mean, obviously, through your conversations here, you were thinking, you know, 2 or 3 nights ahead about the Hollywood Gold Cup, and you had 5 in, and that's all. You were kind of obsessed with that. And you always think about your horses and where you're going to put them or what you're going to do or what little adjustments you're going to make. And I think that's really the key to your success, is that's pretty much your life. That's what you do.
Well, have you heard about his grandson? The horses are not the only part of his life.
Oh, we have a new diversion.
And
now.
We don't have a long enough show here for him to tell about it.
How old's your grandson?
9.
Is he going to be a horse trainer?
Probably is. Probably is. He loves horses.
That's great.
Would you want him to be?
I'd like him to have a real life. I mean, I wouldn't wish this on anybody unless they had to do it. Tried to push Gary out. Go to school.
Well, you pushed me out. it was one of the reasons that I quit training was that conversation I had with you. And you told me you'd done $5 million in purses and you were going to lose money for the year. And I looked at my barn and I said, if Richard Mandela can lose money making $5 million in purses, what chance do I have? And that was a big catalyst in my life. It changed the way I looked at the business because, you know, I was at the time of my life where I couldn't foresee ever becoming Richard Mandela. So
you might want to check the books on that.
No, I believe it was a very frank conversation.
I officially invite you to audit me and then pay me what you find.
Yeah. I don't know if you remember that conversation or not.
I didn't lose money on $5 million.
Yeah.
But the day money did lose.
Yeah. Yeah. And I thought
shocked at how much day money I've lost over the years.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all.
Well, I wouldn't be shocked, but a lot of other people would be.
Yeah.
It's tough racket.
You can't run a barn like I do.
No.
No. It's different than other barns. I can tell you that. Yeah. Or most other barns.
So, Richard, you mentioned the pre-race routine that you go through and think about the fear of failure, as you just alluded to. So when you saddle Beholder in the $5 million Classic, what's going to be going through your mind, potentially?
Did I miss something? Is she doing good? I mean, how's it going for her? Hoping for a little luck, you know.
You did bring Beholder here early, by design?
Well, she's had problems shipping. She's got her quirks. I've said 90% of the time, she's a sweetheart. But that other 10, she's a gorilla. And at home, we know where the bad things happen. And we know how to avoid them and set things up. And when you travel, it's all open game. And, you know, you can't predict who's going to be where, what trucks drive by, what things happen. And horses are unsettled when you move them to a new place. And she takes that pretty serious. And I wasn't expecting her to get temperature and sick, but I expected something wasn't going to go right, and I wanted time to correct it. And so far, you know, she gave us a little scare, but everything's fine now. And I schooled her in the paddock today. It went pretty good, so things are looking good.
Richard Mandela, B. Wayne Hughes, joining us before Beholder came out of the Breeders' Cup Classic this year. And, boy, so much fun to catch up with each of those gentlemen. And, JT, two outstanding individuals for the sport of thoroughbred racing.
Yeah, I mean, just really class acts, both of them. Wayne Hughes, I've known him, like I said in the interview, for 40 years at least, and a man that just loves the sport. And Richard, we've been friends a long time, and he's been a mentor to me, and just an outstanding trainer. You can't say enough nice things about Richard Mandela. So, you know, it was a great opportunity for us to sit down with those guys away from the track. It was nice being at Spendthrift Farm and being able to sit down with them in the beautiful office there and shoot the breeze for a while.
The fear of failing greatly outweighs the excitement of winning. That is the note that Richard Mandela wrote to himself. And when you think about it, that's what makes him so good.
Yeah.
That fear of failure.
Yeah. Because, you know, he's always concerned about that early on in the interview when he said, you know, you can bet that something's going to be wrong. You can't bet that something's going to be right.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of a pessimistic philosophy. But if you've trained horses for a long time, you can understand that. It may not be everyone's approach to life. It certainly wasn't mine, but you can understand the pessimism involved with training horses.
Our thanks again to Richard Mandela and to Wayne Hughes for taking the time to join us for that interview. Bob Baffert coming up on the other side of this break. We caught up with him at the Fezzik Tipton Saratoga sale post winning the Triple Crown. So we'll get a chance to hear from him. You won't want to miss that interview. And before we do get to this break, though, I want to remind you that Tonalist, Mr. Speaker, Honor Code, and Liam's Map reinforce the power of Lane's End Stallions. This 2016 roster builds on Lane's End's legacies, AP Indy, King Mambo, and Smart Strike. As the new crop joins the ranks of current standing stallions, Candy Ride, Lemon Drop Kid, Mineshaft, The Factor, Union Rags, Noble Mission, and City Zip, the successful tradition of the 13-time leading stud farm continues. Lane's End. Visit lanesend.com. We're back to hear from Bob Baffert next on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Lane's End.
Power.
Caracondi, the favorite in front. The Spaniard, News of Canarias, is fighting back. Caracondi has won.
Passion.
Prestige Vendome is making him fight all the way towards the line. It's Caracondi winning by about a neck or so.
Performance.
Caracondi with a rush on the outside goes Bantam. Lead runs from Adam Dahl. Caracondi and O'Dahl. Caracondi.
Gainesway is home to North America's leading sire, Tappet, and is proud to announce the addition of multiple group and grade one winner, Caracondi. One of the leading juveniles in Europe, Caracondi won the Group 1 Grand Criterium with a time form rating of 115, and at 3, he scored impressively in the Group 1 French 2000 Guineas and stormed home to win the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Mile at Santa Anita. Caracondi, standing at Gainesway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainesway Farm.
And they're off to New York. The premier state-bred program in the United States. When you own a New York bred, your horse can run for more than $44 million in purses restricted to registered New York breds. And the New York program pays awards to breeders, owners, and stallion owners when their New York breds finish first, second, or third at New York tracks. We have the quality.
Day at the spa, all the way.
You have the opportunity. New York breds, get with the program. The best program.
Verrazano, brilliant winner of six of his first seven starts, including the Grade 1 Wood Memorial.
And they're coming down to the finish, and it will be Verrazano!
And the Haskell, by a record 9 3/4 lengths, earning a buyer figure of 116, the highest of any three-year-old in 2013.
And Verrazano and John Velasquez have blown away their competition!
Verrazano, a great-looking son of More Than Ready, standing in Ashford.
I'm here with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, how do you value a horse for insurance?
Well, Mike, it's easy to value a horse when purchased out of a public auction. The insured value would simply be the auction price. but ensuring homebreds can be a little more involved.
How so?
Well, factors such as a stud fee, confirmation, pedigree, sales and race records of siblings, even popularity of the stallion, all come into play.
How closely do you work with owners in determining a horse's value?
Well, the owner has a pretty good idea of the horse's value, so generally it's just a matter of agreeing to the request and having the policy issued.
For all your equine and general insurance needs, including farm owners, liability, homeowners, auto, and more, contact Joe Brown Nicholson at NicholsonInsurance.com or call 859-224-7080. That's 859-224-7080. Nicholson Insurance Agency.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Rachel's Valentina Resider and takes the lead. Tap to it on the outside, but they're coming down to the line. Rachel's Valentina is the Princess of the Spa. She beats Tattooin in the spinaway.
Rachel's Valentina electrified the crowd at Saratoga with her impressive win in the Grade 1 spinaway this past summer under Hall of Fame jockey John Velasquez. The daughter of Darley stallion Bernardini, out of champion Rachel Alexandra, stalked the leaders and rolled to a one-length victory. She would conclude her two-year-old campaign with a strong runner-up effort behind Songbird in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies, making her your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley stallion Bernardini has produced 14 career Grade 1 winners, including a Travers winner in each of his first two crops. 2015 Grade 1 winning juveniles Rachel's Valentina and Greenpoint Crusader are among his four Grade 1 winners this year, behind only leading sire Tappet. Look for exciting Bernardini three-year-olds Marking and Watershed in Saturday's Grade 1 Malibu at Santa Anita. Learn more about Bernardini and all the Darley stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
Hi, this is Joel Rosario.
Hi, this is Jockey John Cork.
Hi, this is Calvin Burrow. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Lane's End on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
American Pharoah has opened up a two-length lead as they come to the top of the stretch. And Frosted has moved up into second, and they're into the stretch. And American Pharoah makes his run for glory as they come into the final furlong. Frosted is second with 1/8 of a mile to go. American Pharoah's got a two-length lead. Frosted is all out at the 16th pole. And here it is. The 37-year wait is over. American Pharoah is finally the one. American Pharoah has won the Triple Crown!
Well, we mentioned that the NTRA Moment of the Year voting is now open at NTRA.com, and American Pharoah winning the Triple Crown is one of 10 choices that you will have. Hard to believe that that would not be the unanimous Moment of the Year, but other people will see it differently. Of course, we're accepting your feedback on your personal Moment of the Year at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. It is our poll question here on the Equine Forum this morning. And that was a race and a call that you heard from Larry Colmus right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network in conjunction with our friends at Westwood One and NBC Sports. And it was truly the highlight of our year, being able to broadcast the first Triple Crown winner in 37 years.
Yeah, I mean, how awesome is that? And just going through those races one by one by one, and of course Belmont Day was off the hook. We've had so many shows where we were disappointed. One where the possible Triple Crown winner didn't even get to the starting gate.
Yeah.
And it's just, it was great that it happened when we were there.
And, you know, Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert, jockey Victor Espinosa, the Zayats, all made themselves available, not just to us, but to all the media outlets throughout that entire Triple Crown. Heck, they made American Pharoah available to everyone who wanted to see him as they moved throughout the Triple Crown. And we can't thank them enough, certainly owe them a debt of gratitude for helping to make our coverage a success of all three legs, certainly the Belmont. And Bob Baffert came by to see us at the Fays at Tipton Saratoga sale after winning the Triple Crown. Of course, that was in August, and it was one of the most enjoyable interviews we did all year.
Yeah, well, you have to understand to set it up a minute that he won the Triple Crown, and he's not a very frequent visitor to Saratoga. He doesn't run a lot of horses there. So when he's there, the press is all over him like white on rice. And it was one of those moments where he really didn't want to deal with anybody. And he had just finished a television interview and he saw the headset sitting on our desk. And we actually had Mike D'Anzera scheduled to come on and be a guest at that time.
Yeah.
But Mike was sponsoring the coverage, so he didn't mind taking a back seat to Baffert. And Bob literally saw the headphones, came over, sat down, and started talking. And it was just a fantastic moment for us.
And here is what Bob had to say after winning the Triple Crown. Here's the interview.
Well, thanks for having me, and pretty exciting to be up here. And I haven't been in the cell in like 4 years.
Yeah, it was great to see you.
I still am not sure if I would have bought American Apparel if I would have been here. apparently, every genius in the world let them go by. So that's what's great about our business is that nobody knows for sure. So
yeah, well, it's a situation where you take your best shot, and you're very good at it. I mean, you've bought a lot of stakes winners over the years, so I'm not so sure you wouldn't have bought them if you were here for the sale.
Well, you know, having Pioneer the Now, he was a very good horse, and he was just very, I heard a lot of good things about Pioneer the babies, because I have a couple breeding rights into him, so they were trying to buy my. When they try to buy your breeding right, that's a good sign. That means the baby. Everybody wants to get ahead of business, so. So I thought, well, I'd ask Mr. Zion. He goes, says, no, they look good. Do not sell.
Good advice.
Oh,
that's great.
I almost sold before the Arkansas at every one of them. And it was like, oh, I'm better. And Jill said, you know what? Why don't you just ride it out? You know, you've been here this far, so I'm glad I did.
That's great. Yeah, a lot of people probably wouldn't have thought that Pioneer of the Nile would be doing what he was doing. I mean,
I agree, because he was, you know, he was nice, but it was like, you know, he was steady, but he's out of the mare, Star Goshen. She was a freak. She was a really fast horse. Matter of fact, I was talking to Gary Bazans. He's the one that ran her, and they were talking about she's a Lord at War, and that's, you know, they're pretty good, you know, war emblem out of Lord at War mare. So Lord at War is a really good foundation for the dams, and so I think a lot of it comes from him. And Empire Maker, he was no slouch.
No,
not at all.
Pretty nice top and bottom.
All right, so we were down at the Haskell a couple of weeks ago and watched that Tour de Force by American Pharoah. You said afterwards you were maybe more nervous for that race than any of the others. How come?
Oh, so nervous. You know what? I got there and everybody's like, you know, Josiah, he had 146 friends there. And he was washing out badly. And so he says, you don't understand. We have to win this race. I go, how about the last one? You know, so, but you don't understand. All my friends are here, you know. So so I can feel that pressure, you know, when the party gets big like that, you know, like when my family shows up, it's like everybody's like, you start feeling the heat. So I had the governor coming in for it. But, you know, we got to hang out with Bill Murray for a little bit, which is pretty cool.
How cool was that?
And his riders up, that was epic.
Yeah,
I love that, you know, because I was talking to him right before, and I asked him, are you working on your little riders up? Oh, yeah. He said, matter of fact, I went back and watched all their, you know, he did his homework. But he was there with his son, Lincoln, nice kid. And so it was really, you know, and the fans there at Monmouth Park, you know, they just, you could tell they couldn't get enough of the horse. It's so funny that when the horse came in, I wasn't sure. I saw the horses come in. I said, where is he? I don't hear anything. But everybody was quiet because they all have their videoing with their phones. Mm-hmm. It gets really quiet when he comes in. So, which is a good thing, you know, but because he can get, as you saw a couple of days before, he spooked from some guy running his flip-flops behind him or something like that. So, because he is very sensitive to sound. That's why he sort of lost it a little bit in the walking up to the Derby. People were running around him. He doesn't like that. You know? So, but since then he's been a real cool customer.
He was so cool in the paddock. I mean, he was walking around there like Old Blue. He's like nothing really bothers him. He's such a cool horse.
Well, the thing is, he's got the earplug, see, but if you take him out, you know, he gets pretty aggressive, but if the lungs are in, he's real quiet. So sometimes, like my wife Jill said, well, how does he look? Well, really cool and quiet, but, you know, you want to see a little bit more. That's him. But if you took the earplugs out, but then I was watching him come up to the gate, and that's when he starts to blow up. And whenever he just comes up there, and before he goes in, he always looks up at the – he stops and looks at the – around the grandstand, and he just has a presence, you know, to him. But he has really spoiled us. You know, he's taken us to a different level. And, you know, we're going to have to need some serious group therapy when he's gone. Like group, you know, to talk, you know, like, you know it's going to be like, it's going to be really sad to see him leave.
Yeah. How about little Bodie? How's he going to handle it? Has he been attached to him?
This horse has really got him into racing. You know, I can see he's getting the bug now, which I don't know if it's a good thing, but once he gets in your system, you're a lifer. But he's grown up a lot this last, 4 or 5 months, and he's acting totally, he gets really nervous. I mean, he's really nervous. And but afterwards, you can tell that he gets on the, he was telling me after the Derby, all the horses that won the Derby and the Triple Crown, and he gets on YouTube now, and he's checking everything out, and he's getting stats, he's getting everything, and so he realizes that, you know, after going through Bodemeister, those beats were really hard on him. They scarred him a little bit. So then when Painter came along, and I remember he won the Haskell, he said, you know, Dad, why don't you name that one Bodemeister? You know, so he's better. But he's grown up a lot. And, you know, he basically grown up on television there watching him grow up. But you know, I'm just sad that, you know, my parents turned around, because they used to adore him. My mother just loved seeing him. That's why, you know, Jill said, you know, you're putting him on television too much. I said, it's not that I was trying to just have him on. My mother wanted to see him because they were down in Arizona. And so if I didn't have him on there, she'd say, I didn't see my baby. Why don't you put him on there? So,
yeah.
And that's why it's been very emotional, because I think about them, you know, that they would have loved to enjoy this, you know, with me. So it's too bad they weren't here.
Yeah. Well, he's not only made Bodie a fan, but I think he's made a legion of people fans. So many people talk to us about American Pharoah, and so many people say, oh, you guys are so lucky that you've been able to see all of his races. And, you know, it is a privilege, and it is, he's touched millions and millions of people all over the world. It's really fantastic. And you've done such a great job of representing our business and the horse.
Well, I thank you, but, you know, it's just, I think he's really, this horse made me, like, I think it made me really appreciate, you know, when you go through all those Triple Crown losses and those beats, nobody's had worse beats than Bob Baffert, right? I've been lucky, I've had some good wins, but I've had some really bad beats. So that 96 Derby Cavaneer was a bad beat.
Brutal.
Yeah.
Brutal.
And it's funny that I almost didn't run him. I got down on him because, Jude, he beat me in a cowbred race.
I beat him twice.
Yeah, and I go,
that's
like,
your claim to fame.
That's my claim to fame, yeah.
And I thought, man, I thought he was better than that, you know? But he had a really good horse. So,
that horse that I had ready to order, he was a really, really good horse. He might have been the best horse I ever trained. I was really proud of him. But I was so sad when Cavaneer got beat. I really wanted him to win, because that would have made my claim to fame even bigger. Yeah, Cavaneer ran so good that day. Win, lose, or draw, I mean, it was a great performance.
I was hoping just to light the board that day. And then when he made the lead, I was like, this is not happening. And then I thought he'd won. I still thought he'd hung on and won, because my seats were so bad, you know, way before the wire. And so I knew what it felt like to win the Derby for about 10 minutes before they hung. That's the longest photo ever. And so and when they hung it up, it was like, wow, I'll never get another chance like that. Like, this is it. And so and then I got fortunate. I just bought Silver Charm. I think everything happened for a reason. And I think the Lord wanted me to just suffer, and, you know, before I won the Triple Crown or something. I don't know what. You know, I think everything happened for a reason.
Why do you think he gave you American Pharoah?
Well, look at Ahmed Zayat. He ran third in the second in the Kentucky Derby three times. We were second in the Triple Crown that one year, Bodie Meister and Painter. We won the second Triple Crown for second. So I think it's just this horse is maybe very spiritual. I just feel that maybe my parents or somebody up there, I had help, you know, but I didn't do it on my own. But I'm going to just, we're still, like I said, I feel more pressure on this horse. Before, walking up for the Triple Crown, you're just hoping. And everything's going well. Let's hope that we get it done. And after that, now it's like, they say, winning or misery. So it's like, I just don't want to mess it up. I don't want to be the one, and winning after the Triple Crown was very important to me because I did not want to be on that list that he got beat.
Yeah,
that's a brutal list, isn't it?
Right.
Brutal
list.
That's horrible. That's what I was thinking about all week leading up to the Haskell. Was like, God, I want this horse to win so that he's not on that list.
Yeah.
But I think the reason it was such brutal, because the temptation of turning around and running your horse when people are just pressuring you. In those days, there wasn't, they didn't run for, look at Seattle Slough. What did you run for? Was it 100,000 or whatever?
Right.
It wasn't now it's a million, nothing,
1.6, 1.75, yeah.
So, but it was, I was a little bit nervous. I was really, really nervous right before, But once I saw him in the warm-up, they showed him going the gate. He was all puffed up, and I thought, just get away from the gate, clean, get him running. And I knew competitive edge was going to be really tough to early. So that he had me really you got to always watch out for those Pletcher horses. They're fast.
Yeah. And you had a perfect trip. I mean, you had to be really happy where Victor was all the way.
Yeah, I was worried about the little gray horse that he might, don't let him get in front of you and, get you in a pinch. But Victor rides his horse with so much confidence that I can tell Victor during this whole, when he comes out to the paddock, even to ride him in the Triple Crown, I kept telling him, look at him. Really, there's nothing for you to be nervous about. If I don't have him ready, it doesn't matter how you ride him. I think he's ready, he looks sharp. And when he got on him in the paddock, he looked down when he felt got on him. He looked up at him and he goes, hey. I can feel. They know when they get on him, they go, oh, wait a minute. Hey, boy, wake up. But they can tell, but he was just, he's just always been. But in the paddock with his, if you take those earplugs out, he's a different animal.
Really?
Oh, yeah. He's always
is he training him too?
He doesn't leave the stall without him in there. He's just a very, he'll come out prancing if you don't have him on. But if you put him in, he's quiet. He's just focused and but he's such a kind, sweet animal that everybody you can't believe how sweet he is.
Well, I can tell you this, as good as American Pharoah looked in the paddock before the Haskell, I think you might have won Best Turned Out Award. That suit, snazzy. Looked good.
Oh, you like that? That was my Bichon.
I like that.
I actually wanted to wear it for the Triple Crown, but it wasn't ready. So
it was sharp.
It was sharp, and it was Bichon is always during Beverly Hills, and so the Prince Ahmed, the Thoroughbred Corp, he's the one that sent me over there. It's one of those, by appointment only, to go in there.
Sure.
And when he first sent me in there, he says, go over there. I ordered a bunch of stuff for you. And when Bichon, he was great. When he was alive, he sent me in there and he's telling me this. And I said, no, I don't like that. And he says, I can't believe it. Here, all I do is I came in here, I dress kings and princes and billionaires, and they send me Crocodile Dundee. I forget that. And Jill was sitting there going, zip it, Bob, zip it. Listen to the man.
Hall of Famer Bob Baffert, Crocodile Dundee, as he referred to himself.
Well,
outstanding.
That's who Bichon, that's what Bichon said.
Yeah.
unbelievable. I mean, that was such a rare moment and just to have him hanging out and shooting the breeze with us, it was great. Unfortunately, you could hear the auction in the background. I wish
it was a little bit clearer. But the one-liners and the just the way Bob handled the whole thing was just fantastic. His attitude about the Triple Crown, and interesting to think he's very thinking about it in a spiritual sense, was kind of unique.
And in the interest of time, we had to edit out a little bit of that interview. So there are portions in the full interview that you can hear. If you go back to our website and you click on the interviews tab, you can find that Bob Baffert interview from back in August at the Fezzik Tipton Sale, and you can listen to the entire interview right there as well. And one of the things that he did talk about was Bodemeister, who is another top stallion in addition to Pioneer of the Nile that Bob had the opportunity to train. And you asked him about the stallion shares and how many he might have. And I don't know if you really asked him specifics, but you said that's a great thing of training all those good horses. And he said that the stallion shares were a trainer's retirement program.
That's right.
Great way to look at it.
Yeah, well, you know, it's customary that the trainer usually gets at least one, lifetime season or whatever. And so they can really help pay the bills. I know Richard Mandela is the recipient of a few of those as well. So it's a good thing for a trainer, because it's a tough way to make a living.
Think back on just the little bit that we've covered here over the course of the last 2 hours, looking back on racing in 2015 through some of our interviews we had the chance to do. Bob Baffert winning the Triple Crown, then going on and winning the Breeders' Cup Classic with American Pharoah. You look at Beholder dominating the boys, just annihilating them in the Pacific Classic. You think back to races like the Whitney, where Honor Code ran down Liam's Map, looked hopelessly beaten with an eighth of a mile to go, and somehow, with a 16th of a mile to go, you wouldn't have bet him, and somehow he comes and gets him. You think about the Pizza Man winning the Arlington Million this year, right? All of those races were races you heard right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, and racing is not dead. Racing is alive and well, and it was just a tremendous year. Outside of the Triple Crown, it was a tremendous year for the sport of thoroughbred racing.
Yeah, I mean, we're so fortunate to be able to travel around the country and to go to all these big races, and it's a job that a lot of our friends would like to have and a lot of our listeners would like to have, but we saw some amazing races this year and some incredible moments. I think you're right to bring up the Pizza Man winning the Arlington Million. I mean, even though that cost us a bunch of money personally, it was a great moment. And we've talked about that before, you know, like the Breeders' Cup races. I mean, when I lose a bet on a Breeders' Cup race, it doesn't even bother me, because I realize how ecstatic those people are that win those races.
Yep.
And it's what everybody strives for. Now, it's also great when you like Mongolian Saturday and he comes in at $30, you know, that makes you really, really happy for the connection.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
that helps.
But even when you lose, it's like, it's so captivating. If you have a passion for the game, for the animals, for the people involved. And, you know, I think Mark Cassie, too, his performance during the Breeders' Cup was off the hook. And Mark's a guy that we have gotten to be good friends with. He's a good guest and never fails to support us whenever we ask. And that was another great moment for the HRRN crew, because we've gotten to like Mark, and he's had a great year. So lots of good things happened, and we're looking forward to another great year. These shows that we're going to do at Gulfstream is really going to set the tone for the entire year.
And we'll remind you that if you missed any portion of this particular program, any of the interviews we brought your way, simply go to our website, horseracingradio.net, a podcast of this show and all of our shows available for you each and every week at horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Going to get to a final break before we come back with a couple of thank yous to everybody who has been kind enough to support us throughout the year. Before we do, want to remind you that every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday afternoon from 3 to 6 Eastern, you can catch the A-Train as we roll into Express Bet Radio Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, 3 to 6 Eastern. The Big A, Anthony Stabile. The Little A, Acacia Courtney. They bring you racing coverage from across the country and interviews with the biggest names in racing. That's all on Sirius 220, XM 206, and streaming worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net. We'll get to a break. We'll come back with more. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Lexus, once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Pena here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
Click, order, eat. The new way of ordering Jimmy John's Freaky Fast, Freaky Good Sandwiches is a trend that's sweeping the country. With me tonight to discuss this amazing phenomenon is Ed Stephanopoulopoulos.
Hello.
America's favorite sandwich delivery guy.
That's not entirely true, Bob.
Excuse me?
Technically, all Jimmy John's delivery guys are America's favorite sandwich delivery guys, not just me.
I see. Okay, but we're here tonight to...
Actually, what I just said wasn't entirely true either, Bob. See, some of Jimmy John's delivery guys are actually delivery gals.
All right, so now we...
Or women, or ladies, or females, or persons of the non-male gender.
Ed, could we...
Although, I guess that would be a mouthful.
A what?
I mean, if I had to say America's favorite sandwich delivery women or ladies or females or persons of a non-male gender.
Okay, let's say that regardless of whether your Jimmy John's sandwich will be delivered by a guy or a gal...
Or a woman or...
The fact remains that now you can order that sandwich online using Jimmy John's amazing Click Order Eat system.
That's correct, sir.
And what would you say is the basis of that system, Ed?
The what?
The basis, the essence, the sine qua non.
It's Click Order Eat, Bob.
Moving along here, Ed, what would you say has made Click Order Eat so wildly popular?
Well, what do you think, Bob?
It's freaky fast.
Bingo, Bob.
Click Order Eat, Jimmy John's freaky fast new online ordering system.
You sound just like a commercial, sir.
Now horse players can get an early edge on Saturday's most anticipated races. Daily Racing Form introduces the Saturday Stakes Preview, a new weekly publication that previews past performances for all Saturday stakes from tracks around the country. For the first time, get past performances for all the races you're looking for in one convenient product. Each issue includes the past performances of horses entered in all major stakes for the coming Saturday, plus additional data, stories, and free access to DRF Plus, all for just $6. It's everything you need to jumpstart your handicapping a full day sooner. So look for the Saturday Stakes Preview print edition at all Daily Racing Form retailers each Thursday, or get it online at DRF.com on Wednesday evenings. Don't start your Saturday handicapping without the Saturday Stakes Preview. Try it this week. The Saturday Stakes Preview at retailers each Thursday. For more info, go to DRF.com.
Hello, this is Bill Mott. You're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
The Baron and the Pontiff back with you on the Equine Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Of course, all presented by Lane's End. And we hope you enjoyed the past couple of hours looking back on some of the top moments in 2015 through some of the interviews we had the chance to do. I want to thank Tom Hammond for taking the time to visit with us, Wayne Hughes, Richard Mandela, and then that interview with Bob Baffert you heard a short time ago. And of course, Mike Willman, who joined us in the first segment of the program to talk about opening day at Santa Anita. This is indeed opening day at the Great Race Place, and we hope everybody cashes a few tickets on that outstanding program.
Yeah, it's a really good card at Santa Anita, and great cards all over the place. Stakes at Gulfstream, Aqueduct, Laurel. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Jude, I know there's probably people that you know, you want to thank for being supportive of what we've done throughout the year. But just quickly, I want to touch on this. I want to thank all of our listeners and wish you a very Merry Christmas. Happy holidays, of course. All of our listeners and all of our sponsors who make these shows possible. Everybody at all of the racetracks who helps make our shows possible when we travel throughout the year. And everybody at SiriusXM, NBC Sports, Westwood One, for all their support throughout 2015, and every single affiliate that we work with throughout the country, on behalf of our HRN family to yours, again, a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays.
Yeah, it was a great year, and we can't do it without the support of our sponsors. And let's take our hats off to our producers, Lee Delapina and Sean C., who do such a great job for us all year long.
Yeah, just absolutely amazing. January 16th is our next live race broadcast. It's the Sunshine Millions from Gulfstream. That coverage presented by Adina Springs, so mark that one down in your calendar. And I guess we're going to talk to everybody next year here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
I hope so.
Lord willing.
And we will be back with you
next Saturday, January 2nd. Make sure you mark that one down as well. Again, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and a very happy and safe New Year to everybody throughout HRN Nation. Thanks for listening. And of course, because nothing good comes of deviation, go Steelers.
Good night, Barbados.